I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Spider-Knight?
Alas, friend Spider-Man. By what sorcery doth small ceiling torch shine forth?
It's called a light bulb.
Welcome to Brattleworld. I am your host, the ever-amazing, ever-spectacular Spider-Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best-kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. And welcome to another edition of Spider-Knights of the Round Table, where my guest and I will discuss a much-loved subject in depth and in a round table format. And welcome to another edition of Robot Month, the third edition of Robot Month. I hope you're enjoying it so far in April. And we are going to look at a much hailed sci-fi classic, very influential. We are going to look today with my co-host, who is very robotic when he talks, monotone, very uninteresting, programmed to be uninteresting. Matthew Cattrall's here to discuss The Day the Earth Stood Still, 1951's The Day the Earth Stood Still. And the day and weeks and months are certainly standing still at the moment, aren't they, Matthew?
Hello. Yeah. cheers for the rebuttal comment. I'll be honest, because we've not moved out of this flat for a week now.
Yes, full week. How are you finding it?
I'm so bored.
So bored. Well, that's why we're doing this. So.
I've now been watching The Sims 4 on YouTube. Yes. People play The Sims 4.
And in fact, they've actually reduced the price. EA Games have reduced the price of Sims 4, making people go out and buy it.
I actually think I'm going to buy it on payday.
Yeah.
It's only like 13 quid, but
I've got it on my PlayStation for free.
Pounds.
Bless me.
Bless
you. So, showing signs of coronavirus there. I've just been informed today that I may have to, because I'm an at-risk person, I may have to be in here for 3 months.
I didn't know bald people were at risk.
They're not. Asthmatics are.
Oh, asthmatic. Right.
I've already lost my hair before this.
Well, look, if COVID-19 does kill you, I'll mourn you.
Great. Thank you for that. I'll look at the positives. I'll cherish
that. I will miss you.
Anyway, even though it was made, you know, well over, how many years are we talking?
1951, wasn't it?
70 years?
Yeah.
70?
Yep, 70 years.
Yeah, 70 years.
70 years.
Almost 70 years. Mm-hmm. So, and it's still quite relevant, I think, especially now. But let's go into the film itself. So, The Day the Earth Stood Still stars Michael Rennie as Klaatu, Patricia Neal as Helen Benson, Hugh Marlowe as Tom Stevens, Sam Jaffe as Professor Jacob Barnhart, and Billy Gray as Bobby Benson, and Locke Martin as the robot Gort. So what do you... I'd never seen this before, so yep. it was a new experience for me. But when you first saw it, what were your impressions of the film?
I watched it when I was a kid on like ITV, when I was off school or something like that. And I remember watching it and I just thought, oh, this is great. I think it's one of the first sci-fi films I ever can remember watching.
Yeah, I think it was one of the first proper sci-fi films that was really heralded as something unique and had a message and something to say about, you know, our modern day life and life in America and the things that were going on politically and scientifically at the time. No. I'm sure we'll get into that.
It's a good film, very, very good.
I think that it stands the test of time. It's still, like, even though I've watched it today in 2020, I still enjoyed it a lot. I still had a lot of fun with it. I think, you know, again, I think a lot of it holds up still, like special effects still.
Yeah, I said
well.
That. I was like, you know what? They're not brilliant, but for 1951, I was like, that's actually decent, huh? I was like, very, very good.
Yeah, exactly. So the story, if you're unaware, an alien comes down, which is usually how these things go. An alien pops down for a visit and the whole world goes apeshit crazy. Just mental. Just goes absolutely
mental. I think
we
would. The US didn't seem to be too worried, though. They only had, like, two guards protecting it at the time.
One of the most, you know, most important discovery of mankind, and they've got two
military police guards guarding the thing.
Yeah, guarding the robot.
What? No.
That's two-thirds way through the movie. That was my only that was my only annoyance with that movie. I was like,
it just doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense. It's just too random.
And he just knocks him out anyway. He just goes, plunk, clonk. There you go. Dead.
Yep.
Knocked out. But yeah, so he comes down and he wants to, he says he comes in peace, which obviously is a very, very famous phrase in sci-fi. And we come in peace.
He does come in peace.
And he does come in peace. And he goes to give a gift. But obviously the US military think it's some sort of weapon and shoot him.
Yeah. Well, with that weapon thing, it wasn't a weapon. It was, a gift to the US president.
That's right.
Communicate with the universe and the galaxy itself.
Yeah. All the other planets. And
you are pulling out your jacket. It does open and it does look
very phallic.
It's
very phallic.
And it does look like a bladed weapon as well.
Yeah. Looks a bit maybe like a Klingon weapon or something, some sort of bladed thing.
I was kind of sticking up for the US Army there. I was like,
really?
Yeah, because he pulled it out and then he opened it and it looked like a dagger, like a few.
But again,
like,
you got to understand as well that he doesn't know the customs of America, so he doesn't know what they perceive as a weapon.
He's British, and I don't know the customs of America.
Yeah, but I know. But you've got a better idea. He's from another planet. He's only heard radio chatter about stuff, so he can only get a kind of a gist of languages.
I get it, I get it's his culture. Maybe that was something good, but our culture would be like, I think.
A thumbs up in several different cultures, like a thumbs up in in the Western world is a good thing. It's a positive thing. I think in Germany it means five. Somewhere else it means one. And in other cultures it's an offensive gesture. It's a really offensive gesture to make. So culturally, certain body language and hand gestures can be deemed as inappropriate.
I get it. But if you choose to land in the middle of DC, then you just go and then you pull out a big thing that looks like a weapon, you're gonna get shot.
I don't know if I agree with that entirely. I mean, in today's
that was a federal government.
Yeah. To be fair, obviously their reaction, it's an alarmist culture anyway. We live in an alarmist culture. I mean, look at all this going on right now. That's what we live in, and all this panic buying, all this other stuff. Human beings do tend to make stupid decisions out of fear, And I think that's why this film is still really relevant even today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that happens, gets shot, he gets taken away, the US kind of interview him, and he's like, I need to speak to everybody in the whole world, I need to speak to all the world leaders.
Yeah.
Need to talk to him, need to get this message across.
I love how he said, we've got the UN, and he was like, does that represent all the world's leaders? Yeah. No. I'm not going to speak to the UN. I'm like,
What's the point? I need to speak to every single person on the planet. He's like, can you just, send that message out individually. He's like, no, I'm wasting time. What are you doing? And he's like, and he talks about the petty squabbles and the problems that all these nations have and the wars and stuff. And he's like, this is minuscule in what I'm trying to tell you. I'm trying to save everybody on your planet, and you just won't listen. It's the same as everything. Krypton will explode. You're talking idiocy, Jor-El. Krypton will never explode. It's that whole thing. Nobody ever listens. It's like, we can't possibly shut the beach, Chief Brody. The tourism board will go nuts. We've got a festival on. We can't shut the beach because of this killer shark. It's always happens.
I've only ever seen Jaws once, but I still knew what you're on about.
Yeah,
I've not seen it since I was a kid.
Well, I mean, it's very famous, very
and the only
iconic.
Reason I know, because of the coronavirus epidemic and pandemic, and someone
tweeted
something about that, and Trump saying about the coronavirus, saying, Trump, mate, you need to shut everything down. Yeah. And then he's just like the police chief going, nah, it's fine.
Sounds more like good old Boris Johnson at the moment.
Oh, well, no.
So he kind of discusses all that. And eventually they're like, you can't. He's like, I want to get to know the Earth people. I want to understand the Earth people a bit better, your culture, who you are. I need to understand the world before I give out this big message. Absolutely not. You're an alien. not going to happen. And again, no security.
No, they wasn't even outside the door. The MP locked his door, just have a door handle. He's like, right, struggled from another star system. He can't get through a locked door. Yeah. Right. And then
he doesn't know how doors work.
And then the windows were just one sheet. No, not even double glazing.
I don't even know if there was a lock on the window. He just opened it and jumped out the window.
Yeah, like the security, that was my main thing. I kept moaning and bitching about the security. I was like, come on, if you need to stop the alien escaping, at least have armed guards.
Interesting fact, the US Defense Department were contacted about the film and asked to be involved and to lend, you know, like weaponry and uniforms and things like that for the film. And they refused after reading the script. So it's because they're shown to be in the film to be inept, useless.
They were inept in the film.
You know, they can't get anything right. Like, there's no victory. They end up shooting the alien by mistake, you know. Constantly. However, the National Guard were totally cool with this. They were like, we don't mind showing up the military. You can borrow all our stuff. It's fine. It's cool. So they had no issue with that. So they passed that on. So yeah, I can kind of understand why they wouldn't want to be involved. But in the end, the message is strongest thing. Obviously, the US don't want to look weak, you know, because this movie would go out internationally. You know, they would see it in different countries, and if at the time, you know, it's the height of the Cold War, they probably didn't want to seem weak in that instance. So I kind of understand why they did it. But
I bet the Soviet Union loved it. They completely inept the US in that movie.
But so would have the Soviets. So would have the Chinese. You know, everyone would have been
into
the power of Gort and Klaatu and everything. So
well, not. The power. I just think not putting a military police officer outside of a door.
Two people, one person, you know, all this sort of stuff.
When he's in the hospital, there was no armed guards outside his door. He was just down the hall using a vending machine.
So he escapes, he jumps out the window, and steals a suit.
Becomes Carpenter.
Carpenter, yes. Now, apparently, in the script, you could argue there's a lot of parallels to to Christ, the story of Klaatu. You know, he's coming in peace. People don't believe him. They mistreat him. He's coming with a message. He's trying to save all the people of Earth, but nobody wants to listen. Mm. And they shoot him. They treat him poorly. They fear him. He dies and is resurrected. You know, there's a lot of kind of Christ parallels in the film that you can pull. And Carpenter is a subtle hint, because obviously
there we go. Jesus was a carpenter and owned a suit.
I mean, I wonder if he had a good singing voice. Was he in the Carpenters?
No.
No. Oh, do you mean? Oh, you meant a literal carpenter?
Yeah.
Right. Sorry, yeah. I thought you meant the song duo.
No,
the Carpenters.
I couldn't even tell you one of the Carpenters' songs.
Oh God! I know one. I know at least one, but I can't think of it.
Halfway through this, got it.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to think now. Anyway, so he walks in very creepily into an unlit room.
He does, doesn't he? just a private residence. I know there's a room for rent.
Yeah, yeah. But he walks in, doesn't say a word until they light him up. Put the light. He's like. Like, yes, I would like a room, please.
And then the kid's like, are you in the feds? Are you in the FBI?
Yeah, you're weird. So you must be something. There's something about you. And yeah, he lives there for a little bit, and everyone's like, where is this alien? And there's all this suspicion what the alien looks like, because they don't have any photos. So they're like, he's got three heads and tentacles and two eyes. And it's like, no, he's actually... And again, that plays into that kind of Red Scare, communist paranoia that was around at the time. You know, everyone, all the kind of liberal people with liberal ideas were being hunted down by the group for un-American activities. I think it was the Register of Un-American Activities. So they were being arrested. A lot of actors and stuff. In fact, one of the actors in this almost didn't get cast in this film because of his liberal ideas and his almost, you know, socialist ideas. Was the Professor Sam Jaffe, Professor Bernhardt he plays. He almost didn't get cast in the film, and after this he was blacklisted because of the way he felt politically. Yeah, everyone, you know, obviously at this time everyone was any kind of artists, you know, happened with comics as well, with Seduction of the Innocent and all that sort of stuff. So it's quite a tumultuous time. So it kind of comes, you know, and they were talking on the dinner table saying that this spaceman didn't come from space. I know where he came from. He came from, you know, she's suggesting he came from Russia, and it's a trap or it's a ruse for them to kind of steal secrets Pirates or something like that, or kind of take over America in some sort of...
Just the pure paranoia.
I know.
It's mental.
Mental. Mm. And again, also like the paranoia of the atomic age as well, and like the nuclear power. This, you know, obviously this is post-war, you know, you're really coming off the devastation in Japan. Everyone's really concerned about radiation and, you know, nuclear bombs, atomic bombs, all that sort of stuff. And again, that shows in comics as well. Like all of Marvel characters were created at the height of that kind of atomic worry, like the Hulk, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, all those kind of have
And then you've moved it nowadays where it's a genetically engineered
So it's some sort of some things like that. So there you go. It all kind of comes into and feeds into the art as well.
It's kind of like the Day the Earth Stood Still remake. It wasn't anything to do with atomic weapons or atomic. It was environmentalism.
There you go.
In that one, there's only like 12 planets and can support life in the universe.
Really? Okay.
And because we are on the cusp of destroying ours, they say you either stop it or we're going to wipe everything out.
Yeah, basically.
So, and that's it. You can see, parallels of nowadays. It's environmentalism and stuff like that.
I think that was a wise. I'm not seeing the remake. I've heard it's not as
good. Absolutely awful.
Yeah,
awful.
But I see what they were doing. I see why they went with environmentalism as opposed to like nuclear war and stuff like that, because that's our main kind of current issue, and that makes more sense for you know, Klaatu and Gort to come down and make those kind of those ultimatums. So yeah, and he gets involved with kind of the Benson family, who live at the kind of this kind of bed and breakfast type place. The mother of the young boy says, "Oh, I'm going to go out with my boyfriend."
This is the thing we both wear. Like, bit weird.
He's been there for about 2 days, and he walks into the room and is like, "I'll take care of your son. I'll look after him. Don't worry. You'll go and get some sweet loving, and I will
in the back of a Camaro, whatever it was,
whatever that car was, Cadillac or whatever they were driving."
Yeah, she goes out with a boyfriend.
The boy takes him. He takes him to is it Arlington?
Yeah, a military cemetery.
It's a military cemetery, and they're like, and he's very sad, and things can go. You know, did everybody here die from war? And they're like, well, not really, but you know. And then he trades the kid. He's like, oh, let's go to the movies. I want to go to the movies. He's like, don't worry, I'll pay. But do we need money? I don't have any money. And the kid's like, well, I've got about $2, which I guess could get two people into the cinema that time. And he's like, right, I'll trade you for these. He's like, are these diamonds? And they're like, yeah, I believe so. And can we trade money for this? Or can we use
that's
this?
That's the thing. I really wanted to find out how much they were worth. Didn't tell you through the film.
None of the jewelers could when they were investigated by the fellow, the boyfriend. They just had no idea. They had no idea because of the value, because they had no idea what it was. They'd never seen it before. So how can you value something you've never seen? And that's why he was like, I'll give you a good price for it. It's like, oh, he'll only value that at what he thinks. You know, obviously he wants to make a profit, so he'll say, I'll buy this off you. So yeah, but it would have been interesting to find out how much the diamonds were worth and stuff. So that would have been fun.
It would have been good to see how much you could buy in 1951 money.
Eventually he kind of discovers that, you know, these leaders are not the world leaders probably aren't the best people to speak to. He realizes that he needs to speak to scientists, learned men and women, and kind of get the idea across that the world is on the brink. And then he goes into the professor's place and he rewrites an equation, does a little, you know, Goodwill Hunting on there. Does his best Goodwill Hunting, and the guy's like, "Yeah, I can't believe you did this. It's amazing." And he's like, "Right, let's meet." And you know,
yeah. Before that, the maid kicks him out of the home, doesn't she?
Does she?
Yeah, she's like, "What are you doing in here?"
And it's like, Yeah, she's like, and he's like, "You better not rub that off, because that's, I've just, you know, solved his equation." He's like, "What?" And then, you know, why have you? He kind of just walks out, and she's like, "You've broken into the house. You've done this."
He has broken into the house with a random child. That's not his. Who's that boy? I don't know. Only met him yesterday.
You know, and as time rolls on, there's more and more suspicion around who he is and what he is and what he's doing, and you know, the Mrs. Benson, Mrs. Miss Benson, you know, is unsure, and then the boyfriend's very suspicious as well. They get very suspicious very quickly as well, which I think, again, is a sign of the times that everyone's very much like, oh. Well, to be fair though, if you had a strange lodger asking to spend time with your son after 2 days alone, you would probably be a little alarmist as well, I think.
Yeah, maybe. I'm a dad, and I don't like letting anyone look after my kids.
No, exactly.
Except teachers.
Yeah.
Can now no longer go to school.
Yeah, exactly. Not for the foreseeable anyway.
Well, I'm classed as a key worker, so I can send him back to school if I want to. But
do you work at a locksmith's?
No, shut up. No.
They work with keys.
Internet service provider.
Oh, right. That's a key.
Key worker, because we need the internet during this trying time.
Fair enough.
Still got to go into the office.
You know what I quite liked as well is the start of the film, they had the saucers going round and round and round, like, was it 4,000 miles an hour or whatever they say, 40,000 miles an hour? Just going round and round and round. And then everybody starts flocking to the landmarks. And I'm like, this is quite almost like Independence Day, because they kind of climb to the top of the Empire State Building and things like that. So, you know,
you wouldn't be able to see much of it if you're traveling 4,000 miles an hour.
At this point, though, in like time, in regards to like, you know, sci-fi and alien invasion movies and things like that, I don't think we've had much that's happened, you know, around the landmarks. So I always thought it was quite weird that they kind of flew to those landmarks, you know, after potentially that it might land there. I don't know. Maybe they think that because it is a landmark. I mean, it's a baseball field, is it? Or something like
that?
Is it Yankee Stadium or something like that?
No, it's a baseball field in DC.
I don't know.
Right next to the big phallic shaped thing they've got in DC.
The big, the obelisk or monolith or whatever it's called.
What's it called? The Washington Monument?
I think so.
Something like that.
But yeah, I found that quite interesting because that's quite a big trope in, you know, sci-fi films. Another big trope, which I noticed as well, and which has been, was the use of a theremin in the soundtrack.
I really want to win the Euromillion so I can just pay you to just learn the theremin.
I would love to have learned the theremin.
£32,000 a year. Good luck getting that.
I mean,
that sound clear.
That's good. That's good sound. That's good sound. I could just do that. I could just do my theremin impression for you all the time, constant, and you'll love it. You'll love it.
I win the Euromillions, you're staying in this flat.
That is definitely happening.
£32,000 a year, and we're going to live stream you on the internet for 37.5 hours a week learning the theremin.
So yeah, it was and that kind of spearheaded the use of electronic music and instruments in regards to sci-fi films. And like, we've almost never gone, most sci-fi films have some form of electronic music in it for the most part.
I do like sci-fi.
There you go.
I do like electronic music.
There you go. The music actually inspired Danny Elfman of Batman, you know, Spider-Man, all the Simpsons, all that sort of stuff, inspired him to become a composer.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, that's really good, though.
So that's right. I thought that was a really cool little factoid. Mm. Did you know that Claude Rains of The Invisible Man was almost cast as Klaatu?
Would have been good. Yeah. But, well, I think
he's got a good voice. He's got a great voice.
I think Klaatu. What's his name again? The
actor. Michael Rennie.
He was a very good cast.
I thought he was great as
really,
well, yeah.
Really good.
Very serious.
He kept a serious face, serious man, and you respected him straight away.
And you listened to him as well. He had such a presence, and you paid attention to him, and your eyes always kind of gravitated to him. I think that's important as well, because again, in terms of sci-fi, it's not that much of a flight of fancy. Obviously, there's a spaceship, there's a guy, and there's a robot. Sure. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, it's done very seriously. It's taken really seriously. It's not over the top. He doesn't have he does have the kind of, he can heal a little bit better and he has a resurrection machine. But realistically, he's as human as us, potentially. He just lives a little bit longer. I do love when the doctors are kind of investigating him, doing the tests and stuff. And they're like, oh, he's healthy as anything. But they're all smoking like chimneys in this
in
a hospital. Like all the learned doctors who you know, should know
medical
it's bad
degrees.
For them. Medical degrees. They're just like popping away at these
But
fags.
You got to think back then, you didn't think smoking caused cancer.
No, but I think, I'm not sure when they realised that, but
30 years ago.
Was it? Only 30 years ago?
I only know this due to watching it on the news today about COVID-19 epidemic and something about the US vice president who said he didn't believe smoking caused cancer just a few years ago. And he's in charge of the COVID-19 thing in the US.
Yeah.
Well,
There you go. 30 clever. Years. 30
clever
years.
People.
So I get in 1951, but you just look back at it now and you just go, wow. But you can say that about anything. Like, we've got Friends on mute in the background.
We do, we do.
And some of the jokes there, you wouldn't be able to say.
Absolutely not.
But you've got to take it with a pinch of salt back then.
It's the time.
But I also think it was one of the... That is one of the shows where you look back and go, well, times have changed, not as bad as we make it out. So yeah, spoken in the hospital, not too good, but hey, it was the
times. It was the times. But it was definitely quite interesting to see how much we've come along and how different this has become. Yeah. But I do like that it was taken seriously and it's not too weird or wacky or bizarre, or you know, it's aliens with tentacles and all this other stuff. It's a very human story. It's a very human message. Gort, we'll get onto, I'm sure, in a moment, because it is Robot Month. Mm-hmm. Don't forget Robot Month. But I think that was the best way to do it. Kind of enhances the message. Almost has like a documentary type feel with all the kind of newsreels and things like that. Like, oh, the radio and everything's there's an alien and all that sort of stuff.
Get that in a lot of older movies.
Yeah,
don't you
kind of go, oh no. So I think that was wise. I think that was quite important to have in the movie. But yeah, let's talk about Gort himself. Gort was played by Locke Martin, who is about almost 8 foot tall. So he's a big guy. He was a cinema usher or a theatre usher initially, and they cast him because of his size. And they put him in this massive suit and they seal it up back and front. Physically, though, he wasn't actually very strong.
Just tall, skinny.
He's just a tall, skinny dude. So there's scenes where he's carrying, you know, is it Patricia Benson? Or
yeah, he's carrying her.
Oh, sorry. Helen Benson, played by Patricia Neal. Yeah, so. He's carrying her. And there's ones where it's like it's a dolly or he's being assisted or, you know, or it's a fake body he's carrying and things like that. So, he did struggle. Apparently, his arms would spasm because he was
How heavy was this suit?
Yeah.
It looked like it was just made out of foam.
Well, I mean, it's, obviously, certain materials can be quite heavy, you know. Mm. Sometimes things are just awkward. Like, you wouldn't necessarily seem, they don't seem heavy, but because of the awkward way they are, it might affect him. Again, we don't know how frail he was. He could have been quite a frail guy, who knows. But he still did it. But the director made sure they only filmed for about half an hour each time because of the strain on his body. He didn't want to upset him or cause him any damage physically. But he is a very intimidating presence, I think, Gort. And I think Gort is the most kind of memorable portion of this movie because he is this massive thing. You know, he stands still. You know, he is this kind of... I mean, he's the looming presence of this doom, isn't he? Because they're talking about that he can... You know, we see his power at the start when Klaatu is shot and he just disintegrates everything, all the weapons. He doesn't kill anybody, but he disintegrates all the weapons as a kind of warning. He says, you know, you've shot my master, you know, so I'm going to disintegrate everything. And it's within seconds and all the army are just like useless, kind of impotent.
Just melts them. They're all...
And they can't do anything. And then he just kind of shuts down, stays there for the majority of the movie until kind of the end where he's kind of reactivated, kind of midway through and then the end he's kind of reactivated. Mm. But I mean, even now, I think the design is very simple. It's sleek.
It was good design. I liked the design of Gort. Very, very good.
And I like the Cyclops-esque eye as well. Yeah. Kind of almost calls to kind of to the front of those kind of mythological creatures, those things from like Greek myth and stuff, and the dangers and the lessons that would be learned.
Things like Battlestar Galactica took from Gort as
well. Yeah, Cylons.
Amazing.
Gort, I think Gort and this film hugely influential on everything. Even the phrase Klaatu Barada Nikto is quite an influential phrase that's been repeated or used.
It's my safe word.
That's a long safe word. A lot could happen between.
Especially
those.
When you gagged, mate.
Klaatu Barada Nikto. Sorry, what? Klaatu Barada Nikto. No, I think he's having a stroke, so I'm going to stop.
Euro trip. Great film.
I do quite like Euro trip. Yeah. But yeah, like that phrase is a big kind of famous phrase. It's even used in Army of Darkness, the third Evil Dead movie, where it's the magic word. So he has to pick up the Necronomicon, the Book of the Dead, but he has to say these magic words or all these horrible things will happen. And he forgets the phrase and it is Klaatu Barada Nikto. And he's like, Klaatu Barada. You know, he kind of pretends to say it. And he's like, right, that's fine. I'm cool. cool, walks away. And obviously, all the stuff in Army of Darkness happens because he's a bit of an idiot, which is a great movie, lots of fun. But yeah, so this is hugely, hugely influential. What do you think Klaatu Brodernikto means?
Stop.
Please stop.
Please stop. It can mean anything. Would you? Does it actually have a meaning, or is it like I am Groot, where it means?
There's no real set meaning to it, from what I can see. There's quite a lot of suggestions and things like that, but generally, it doesn't mean anything. I tend to think it's like, because the first word is obviously his master's name, and he does go to kind of, he finds him, resurrects him. So I part of me thinks it's partly to do with that, like it's a direct thing, like go resurrect him, or go find him, or search his body out, or you know. But then a lot of people think it's more to do with the message of the film, like you know, cease all activities, cease, war, cease your nuclear race, arms race, things like that. It could literally mean whatever you want it to mean, but so
kind of like Iron Groot.
Yeah, it could be. So it's down to interpretation. It could mean, you know, cease all hostilities. You know, it could mean anything you want. Or the message has still not been given to the humans. Could mean anything you want. And I think that that's good that it's left up to interpretation. But I think it is one of the most famous phrases, nonsense phrases or kind of, you know, alien phrases in cinema history. You know, it's so, so influential. And again, we see it in so many of these movies and what could happen and what potentially does happen.
Benson say it twice? She says it twice to Gort, and I was like, yeah. Well, she says it twice. Is that not turning back on again? So he's just like,
right, murder.
Murder again.
Do you know the body count in this film is quite low as well for an alien invasion movie?
What is it?
Two.
Who died?
Those two security guys towards the end start shooting, and he kills the two security guys. He knocks two of them out when he escapes.
So that's them two.
Yeah, he knocks two, but then later on, towards the end, before the big reveal and the message is given out, he shoots two guys and eradicates them.
Can't even remember.
Yeah. There you go.
Good though. Only two deaths.
So when he talks to Professor Bernhardt, and he talks to the scientists, organizes the world leaders to come, and Gort brings him back, and Patricia Benson or Patricia Neal as what's her face, she says, you know, do you have the power over life and death? And he goes, no, only the Almighty Spirit has that. And apparently that line was not in the movie, and the studio worried that it was coming off across a little left wing. So they said, we can't say that these aliens are more powerful than God, effectively. We have to say or do something. So they had to, they spearhead. Obviously, there's Christ parallels in it, but that was just very subtle. But like this line, they were like, we have to put this line in, or we, you know, the film might not come out. It might be blacklisted, blah, blah, blah. So like, just shove this line in. And the director and the writer were like, absolutely not. It takes away everything. You know, it can ruins the message of the film. But the producers forced that line into
20th century film.
Yeah, there you go. So that was it. And that was history. And he comes out and he delivers his message to all the world, because we don't really know up until this point. We get a gist of what the message is, but it's never said outwardly until right at the last minute what that message is. And it's really nice to see, even in 1950s, they're like, we need a world assembly. And it's nice to see people from India, from China, you know, it could have easily have been 30, 40 white people at this time, in the 1950s, because it was really nice to see like some diversity within this film, because realistically there would be, if there was world leaders and world scientists, there would be that amount of diversity.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's a good message. I like the whole message of the film. And when he actually makes the Earth stand still, it's crazy. He was like, look, this is our power. This is what you need. This is what we can do. And unless you stop, this is what we're going to do constantly.
Yeah. So yes, because that's what the professor says. You need to show some force. You need to, you know, make sure that this is an example. And he says, okay, I'll come up with something. He's like, don't hurt anybody. But he turns off the power for everything in the entire world, doesn't he?
Planes and aircraft and flights and hospitals.
Yes.
And I love that, because it's like, no, you can still have your power.
And it was, again, anyone else. Again, only for half an hour.
Half an hour.
But the whole world goes absolutely apeshit. Again, this alarmist panic that, you know, we are, you know, somewhat experiencing right now in the state of the world.
I think if we had 30 minutes of our power now, we'd be gutted. There'd be nothing we could do.
Oh, no. We've got books.
We do, and we're waiting for our jigsaw to be delivered.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do a jigsaw.
We are doing this jigsaw.
What's the jigsaw of again?
Christmas.
Christmas jigsaw, of course.
Christmas jigsaw.
Very, very timely.
Thousand pieces. Going to take us days.
God.
I know, we're putting it on this table.
Will it fit on the table?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah. Okay. Be good.
We'll find out.
It's due now.
But I do love the kids. The kid in it is not as annoying as I thought
he'd
be.
I actually really like the kid. Yeah. I think he was cool.
He's fairly sensible. He's still a kid, obviously, so he has like interests and what have you. But
yeah,
takes a strange
man to a cemetery. So,
yeah, first thing. We're going to go visit Dad. Yay!
Let's go to a cemetery with a man I've just met.
So you want to have? He even tells his mum, "Yeah, we went to the cemetery." I think she'd be like, "Okay, sure." Then we went to the cinema.
It was too interesting back then. Yeah, but I also think we're not trusting enough now.
But I also think maybe that we weren't, like, in regards to, you know, paedophilia, probably not. But in regards to like the communist Red Scare, the anti-American, un-American activities, I think we were too paranoid. We're just paranoid in a different way now. We're just paranoid.
With many things, and I love how we got the word paedophilia into the
pedophilia
podcast.
Right in there.
Let's get away from that.
Did you know that Arthur C. Clarke, a heralded sci-fi writer, this is one of his favourite sci-fi films?
I can tell why. Yeah. Like you said, you've never watched it, and you watched it, and you're like, very impressive.
Really?
We were going to do another film for this podcast,
yeah,
which you would like, nope.
No.
Awful.
No, I've not got anything to say. We watched Bicentennial Man. Someone suggested Bicentennial Man for a watch. And I was like, you know, yeah, we'll give it a go. And Andy Knowles, who was on the previous two podcasts for Robot Month, he said, oh, it might be a bit like AI, which I hated AI.
Never seen AI.
Don't.
But I can handle Bicentennial Man. You hated it.
I mean, If Robin Williams wasn't in it, I think it would be very dull, boring, uninteresting. I think it starts well. I think the first act, I said,
was really good.
I think the first act is strong, but then it goes off into this kind of love story thing.
Rubbish.
And it's a bit creepy that the girl he used to look after, speaking of Robin Williams, is on the screen now. It's the Friends episode where Robin Williams and Billy Crystal turn up for no apparent reason.
I can hear his accent in this already still. Anyway, yeah. If he wasn't in the film, it'd be just awful.
Yeah, 100%. I think if it was any other actor, less talented actor, because he's got a lot of warmth and there's a lot of charm to it. But again, it just kind of goes off the rails. I think if it stuck with the idea of him trying to become human and getting the rights and getting freedom and being classed as a human, being allowed to die as a human.
And not about him trying to sleep with his...
Yeah.
Old owners, like, daughters, great granddaughter.
Yeah. I mean, people had issue with Captain America trying to sleep with his ex-girlfriend's grandniece, which is, you know, in the comics, you know, it is there, it exists. She's a really cool character in her own right, Sharon Carter. But like, if you think that's creepy, then this is creepy. This is a creepy thing. And not only is it, like,
trying to sleep with Miss Honey, and he succeeded.
You know, it's just a bit odd to me. And it's like all the other the actors are fine. It's by Chris Columbus. He did this as well, and he regrets doing Bicentennial Man. Robin Williams regrets doing Bicentennial Man, or regretted doing it. And Disney also took $20 million off the budget when they were doing this. And I think the story they were trying to make didn't come across. I think there could have been a lot more. I feel like it's a bit overly sentimental and sappy, yep, but it doesn't do it in the right way. I think it could have done it in a much more kind of interesting and human way. The year jumps as well in Bicentennial Manor a bit. Like you said, like he has his beach house property. and he's gone away for 20 years. Nobody touches it. Nobody buys it. Nobody demolishes it. You know, I'm not sure if it's, maybe it's an extension of the Sam Neill's character. Maybe it's his money and that's why it's, but even then he fucks off for another 20 years and then he's like, I'm dying. Come back to my bedside. You know, and all this sort of stuff.
So we've just cleaned out our cupboards.
We have. We had a big deep clean.
In 5 years or whatnot. And.
Yeah.
They were filthy.
They were dirty. Dirty. Full of useless crap. We
boxes. You know,
boxes of boxes. Of Uber vouchers.
Uber Eats vouchers.
Nathan Richard Smith, I blame you. We have kept some of your stuff. You know, we haven't chucked it all, but it is there whenever you want to come and collect it. So Bicentennial Man, I wouldn't recommend it. I did a lot of research, obviously looked into a lot of films that are not great robot films and robot related media for the previous podcast with Andy, and Bicentennial Man is not one I loved. I would much if I was going to watch a Robin Williams film, I would not go with this one.
Yeah. What does robot mean again?
Oh, I'm not sure what robot mean. I think it's an automated. Are you going to go? Do you want to get it up?
Does it mean like slave or something like that?
Potentially. There's arguments that say that is Frankenstein the first, you know, robot
meaning
movie?
A machine resembling a human being and able to replicate certain human movements and functions automatically.
But before that, what was it? Its original meaning?
I don't know. I thought it had a better meaning. Oh well.
Not to worry. But I mean, this month I kind of looked at, we've looked at AI, we've looked at androids, I know they're all slightly different. We've even looked at cyborgs a little bit in the previous podcast. But again, there's parts of me that kind of thinks it all falls into somewhat of the same area.
At the moment, the show I'm watching, which is Star Trek Picard.
Yes.
Only about androids and robots and synths.
But the Borg, aren't the Borg cyborgs?
The Borg, yes, they are, but it's all about androids becoming self-aware and destroying the whole of existence.
Very, very Blade Runner.
Very Blade Runner.
Yeah,
very fair Blade enough. Runner.
I mean, there's a lot of that. Me and Andy talked a lot in the previous podcast about some of those kind of characters and some of the things going on. But anyway, back to The Day the Earth Stood Still. Did you know that the writer of the original story only got paid $500 for the rights?
Wow.
Yeah. Wouldn't be the same today.
He'd be paid a decent amount for the rights now.
I mean, look at Lord of the Rings. Look at the Amazon are doing their own series and they paid a couple of billion or million or something just for the rights for Lord of the Rings. Mm. You know, J.R. Tolkien. Is it J.R. Tolkien? Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, J.R. Tolkien, his family are raking it in. And that's before they've even spent any money on the TV show. Like, that's just to get the rights.
Isn't it going to be like the first billion dollar TV show?
Probably the most expensive TV. But everybody wants their next Game of Thrones, don't they? Everyone wants their next big fantasy epic. Got things like Witcher out there.
I hate fantasy films.
I don't mind them. I think you've got to kind of set the rules pretty well.
Yeah.
Fantasy films, and I think that's the problem, is people are just like, ooh, magic. And you know, it's a lot of Deus Ex Machina sort of stuff where it's just like, you know, oh, he did that because of this. I think my favourite line in the film from The Day the Earth Stood Still was, it says, I am fearful when I see people substituting fear for reason.
Great line. Yeah. Absolutely great line. Let's not get into politics, but it can mean so many things for that.
It's all topical. It's very topical.
All very topical.
I mean, our last podcast was very topical as well. You know, we talked about the handling. We did, remember?
The host.
Yes. So we did The Day the Earth, we talked about that. We talked about a virus, the mishandling of governments, the suffering of low-income families, you know, all that sort of stuff. Again, rings very true to today. But
it does, doesn't it?
Did you know that George Lucas is also a fan?
You can see why. Like I say, I've been a fan of this film for years. Yeah. I'm very happy we got it.
Do you think it would be on your like top 10 sci-fi movies ever?
No, because I'm a bit... Maybe, actually. Thing is, with sci-fi, it's my favourite genre because I just like 90-minute things that are just ridiculous and I can sit down, lie down, and just mong out and listen to them.
But what about what's wrong with fantasy then?
I hate it. I just hate it. My mum used to force me to watch Neverending Story.
Two things.
I hate Atreyu. hate.
Hate a dragon.
Hate a dragon.
What about the drowning of the horse?
Oh, just awful. And the film ended.
One of my favorite podcasts, Jack and the Geekstalk, they did a rewatch of Neverending Story, and I was just like, did you notice how creepy Falcor is when he speaks to Atreyu? He was like, I've been watching you sleep. Come. Stroke me and all this sort of stuff, and it's like really fucking weird.
I just don't like fantasy. Sci-fi, yes. I get it. Mm. And I get why people like link it, fantasy to sci-fi.
Yeah.
But I just no.
It's kind of two ends of the spectrum, isn't it?
Yeah. Don't like dragons, don't like magic. That's the reason why I much prefer Star Trek to Star Wars.
Mm.
Because Star Trek tries to explain why these things can happen.
Yeah.
The science behind it. I mean, Star Wars is, right, we've just got the Force.
Star Wars is kind of sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah.
More so. It's more, I think Star Trek in a way is a bit more like, potentially that could be us in a thousand, you know, in a million years or something.
Yeah.
Potentially, because it's science-based, the science around it. Obviously, it's still fantasy and stuff, but there's fantasy elements, but it's more realistic in its portrayal of the sci-fi elements, I think, and the ideas that many big-name sci-fi writers did. Star Wars is a lot more kind of bang for your buck and action and adventure type stuff. Star Trek does have those elements, and I do like Star Trek a lot, but I probably still prefer Star Wars.
Complete opposite.
But speaking of Star Wars, George Lucas named three of Jabba's henchmen. Guess what he named them?
Klaatu, Nikto. What's
Barada, Nikto.
Yeah.
So in Return of the Jedi, three of his henchmen are two: Klaatu, Barada, Nikto.
It's a bit weird that I forgot my safe word.
I'm worrying for you now. I'm worried. Is there anything else you want to talk about the movies? Any bits you really liked or really enjoyed?
What else did I really enjoy? You know, what was the Doctor called again?
He was called Professor Jacob Barnhart.
He was really good. I really liked him.
Yeah,
straight away, you could see he was the only person that he needed to speak to.
Yeah.
He's like, he was the one that was like, right, like, I understand.
Yeah,
like,
and he has that classic mad professor hairdo, which is great.
He's one of the learned. He's like, right, no, you don't speak to the government. No. You speak to the people who understand these things. No, he was really, really good. Like you said earlier as well, the kid, he wasn't as annoying as the
Could
other
been,
kids
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
in films. He said a few things, but other than that, he was really, really good. The boyfriend, I didn't like. The mum's boyfriend.
Well, you're not supposed to, though, are you, really?
Bit of a prick.
Yeah. So he basically, he suspects that Carpenter, Mr. Carpenter, is Klaatu, and he takes the diamonds.
He was right.
Yeah, he was right. But then there's a moment where they shut down all the power, and Klaatu explains himself to Patricia Neal's character. Patricia Neal as well, she thought that this film was just ridiculous. She was saying all these lines and stuff. She thought it wasn't going to be taken seriously. It was just going to be another sci-fi bit of
B-movie.
B-movie thing, like a Roger Corman type thing, or, you know, Attack of the Killer Crabs or something like that. But she was laughing during some of her lines, and Michael Rennie is like, you're gonna play it this way? You're gonna laugh all the way through this? You know, he's like, come on, take it seriously, let's just do it.
And she was I think back then you didn't really have like
the big blockbusters.
Big blockbuster sci-fi films that are taken seriously.
True.
You have all the old ones that are just B-movies, like Attack of the Blob or whatever.
Yeah, The Blob. The Blob is a good one, yeah.
They are...
Giant Claw.
They're verging on decent movies like The Blob. It is a B-movie.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also a decent one.
Have you seen the remake? The remake is great.
I have, but we might have to watch that.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good one.
I've not seen that in a while.
Oh, so good.
But yeah, but this is like one of the ones that you think it is one of the first sci-fi good films.
Yeah.
Like really, really good. Everyone's like, you know, that's decent. And nowadays, sci-fi films are the biggest films that you get.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Comic book films, sci-fi films.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of sci-fi.
But
on
then you also
comics.
Get awful ones nowadays, like Aeon Flux, which comes from...
That was an MTV cartoon.
Yeah.
Might be based on a comic.
Comic, I'm sure. But yeah, awful. But then you get some good, awful ones, like Equilibrium. Love it.
I love Equilibrium. I think Equilibrium is a sick film.
It's a bad film, what's really good.
Yeah, I think it's a bit underrated, yeah. Actually. I do think, you know, it's got good actors in, a good, you know, a lot of people are like, well, he does feel in that. He definitely does feel. Everybody, yeah, obviously the drugs make their feelings kind of, they retard their feelings in a way. They kind of make them lesser.
We're all Vulcans. And
like, we can't not feel. Like, it's impossible. Like, humans have to feel on some level, but it's not as expressive or the emotions aren't as big.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, I you know what I really like? The ending.
What his message?
Yeah, so he gives the message. He says, "If you take your attach your atomic engines and your nuclear power to rockets and send them into space and endanger our other planet, we will be forced to act. We will be forced to obliterate. We have the power. You've seen Gort. Even says Gort has the power
to destroy
the planet.
His power is what's the word he said? Like unimaginable,
yeah,
unlimited. He can destroy the planet.
Destructive potential." Yeah.
A man in a foam suit, but yeah, but it was really good. His message was really, really good, and yeah. Then it just ended. It was like, that's my message.
Yeah, it does kind of just, and it in some ways it's quite abrupt, the ending.
It is
in a lot.
I forgot how abrupt that ending was, but I'd like that as well. Yeah.
Because it kind of, it points the finger at you.
Yeah.
It says, if you keep going the way you're going, we will destroy this planet. Mm-hmm. It is now up to you. It's your decision to do what's right, to do the best for this planet and for everybody on it and all the life on it. It's down to you. And I think, in a way, the abruptness makes that question all the harsher.
Yeah.
And it makes you kind of question your own actions in helping the planet and in assisting the planet. You know, do you recycle? You know, all those kind of things. You know, how could you assist and how can you better yourself to better everybody in the world and everybody's, you know, potential to be.
We've not listened to it though, have we?
Have a letter, last stop. No, never. No. Never. We're awful. We're awful. Human beings are the worst.
We are an awful
race. We're an awful race. You know, us included, we're not great.
Took out the recycling today.
Okay, yeah, you did. We do recycle.
Yeah.
We do something. We do things. We give to charity.
I even set up a new recycling box because the other one was getting manky.
Fair enough. That's fine.
Is manky a word Americans will understand?
No, I don't. Probably not. Manky means disgusting or, you know, awful, bad, you know, smelly.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. Again, we've got a lot of American fans, haven't we? So
in California.
California.
I hope the lockdown is going okay for them.
Yeah. Our thoughts go out to everybody during this trying time.
We will be in that within the next three, 4 days.
Potentially the UK will be locked down because a lot of stupid people are still going out into very public areas en masse, which I don't agree with.
And we've not left this.
And I'm not going to be able to. Potentially not going to be able to leave this flat for 3 months, you know, and I could just, you know, up and just go out, but I'm not because it's to save lives. It's to protect people. It's to protect the planet. It's to protect the elderly, protect the people who are vulnerable, including myself, you know, and it's to slow it down, slow the progress of this virus to a halt. China have done it. They've managed to do it. So we need to start doing it as well, really.
We will.
I certainly hope so. Yeah, anything else you want to say? But I think we're coming to an end slowly but surely.
No, I think I've said everything. Really good film.
Yeah.
If you've not watched it, watch it. But I was very surprised you'd not seen the film.
To be fair, I've also not seen the Mad Max films either. So I think I'm gonna go into those and try those.
Yeah, I don't like them.
No, fair enough. I'll give them a go. I've seen Fury Road. I really liked Fury Road.
Is that the last one?
Yeah, yeah, the Tom Hardy one.
Hated it.
Yeah, fair enough. But that's your choice.
It's weird because every person I spoke to
loves it.
Has
I'll be honest. I think I saw the end of Mad Max 2. I turned off Mad Max 1 about more than halfway through because I think nothing much had happened. So I was like, right. But I'll give it another go. We do have one listener comment. So it's from I Am Jack's Musings at I Am Jack's Musings. I've only ever seen it the once. I've only ever seen it the once, but its influence upon sci-fi is indelible in the same way as Metropolis, 2001 A Space Odyssey, or Blade Runner, plus the invasion of the evil dead, of course, which is referencing the Army of Darkness, where he uses the magic words. But yeah, that was good. I'm very happy with the film. I highly recommend it. I think you've got to watch it just to see where all the references come from, and, you know, in Simpsons and various other things. You know, the so many kind of big kind of references in other films as well. And it's a classic film, and it's still very topical. And it's not a boring movie. It takes itself very seriously, but it's also a lot of fun as well.
So. You liked it so much. We rented it, and you also got the DVD.
I got
on
the
its
DVD,
way.
Yeah.
So got it downloaded to the box, and yeah. then DVD on its way.
The wonderful Men of Skye. So yeah. I'm glad I've got that DVD, because that's going to be a good one in the old collection. But yes, so that's the end of the podcast. It's been fun. I hope you've enjoyed our ramblings during our isolation.
Well, it's we've had to do something.
Yeah.
Because we'll go mad. We've been cleaning, which isn't like us.
Yes, I know. so bored. But you can find the podcast on Facebook at Secret Bores. That's in the search bar. Type that in. Twitter, it's at @Dan_Bores. Instagram, it's Spider Dan Secret Bores, all one word. And it's available on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, and many, many more. And if you'd like to donate towards the podcast, you can buy me a coffee at ko-fi.com/SpiderDanAndTheSecretBores. And if you're going to interact with us, don't forget to use the hashtag #PrepareForPrattle. Can they find you on the social medias, Matt?
Yeah, but I can never remember.
You never remember it. I think it's Matt X or Matt underscore X.
MXCATT on Twitter. Yeah, I think so. I think it's something like that.
Again, I'll tag you.
Instagram's the main one.
Is that your main one?
Well, it's Twitter or Instagram.
Yeah.
I have Facebook, but I just don't use it.
Well, Facebook does help with the old promoting of the podcast, but it's more personal, I'd say, I use it for the most part.
Yeah.
But that is it. So I hope you guys are all well. Keep safe. Keep inside. Keep indoors.
Stay indoors. Don't spread COVID-19
Please
around.
Please do not.
Don't be dick.
Yeah, don't be dick.
Stay in.
Don't be dicks. Which is a good lesson for anybody. If there's a lesson to this podcast, is don't be dicks.
Yeah.
Or overall, I think that hopefully we'll get through this. I will still be podcasting, even if I am alone. I will still be podcasting, so there'll still be more content coming. Because again, I'm going to be in here. I might be in here for 3 months, so I might need to.
You are doing. I'm one still. A day. Gonna,
I might be doing yeah one a week, one a day. Who knows? I will be keeping busy regardless. So keep your eyes out, and I'll keep you guys up to date with what's happening, what I'm doing, what's going on, whatever happens. But yeah, keep safe, keep secure, go to work if you can, don't go to work if you can't, and hopefully this will all blow over. Goodbye.
Bye.